MichaelRoysenMD.com.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Michael Roizen, MD. Here's Dr. Mike.
And this is Dr. Mike. We have an outstanding guest for you in this half hour. David Agus wrote The End of Illness, a number one New York Times bestseller, followed it up with A Short Guide to a Long Life, one of my favorite books because it is really short. It's 65 items, and it covers almost everything, maybe everything that's important for you to stay well. And that's really the point. I was at a conference with a group of us who were discussing what was happening in health, some of which were health insurers, most of whom are not making money this year. That is, they're living on their reserves, the reserves they put away. And they indicated to me that they're going to have to put into state regulators next year 30 to 50% increase in insurance rates. These include California, the big state, and New York, and even in Massachusetts. And you say, if they put in that big increases, you say, why is that? And they say, because it's finally that the needless chronic disease is catching up with us. As I watched TV today, I couldn't help but think of asking a question to David Agus, which is, I don't think we're a red nation or a blue nation. We're a needlessly sick nation, and how are we going to change that? David, The Lucky Years is the new book. He is a professor of medicine and engineering at the University of South Carolina, heads University of Southern California's Westside Cancer Center, so he still practices, and is the Center for Applied Medicine and Molecular Medicine director there as well. He's an international leader, but let's not waste time with any more introduction. David, thanks for coming on. How do we stop us from being needlessly sick?
Michael, you know, the way I look at it, it's one simple thing. We all have a right to do what we want in our country. We can smoke. We can sit all day. We can drink all the sugary sodas we want. But does society have the obligation to pay for the healthcare ramifications of our behavior? We've gone away from personal responsibility, and I do think we have to go back. Do the non-smokers want to subsidize the smokers? Do the people who sit all day want to subsidize the people who exercise? It's a critical question we have to address.
And how do we, what I keep saying, and you and I feel very similarly on this from your answer to that question, my problem is, if you will, is how do I motivate those of my patients who, now I have a unique patient group, so obviously it doesn't pertain, but how do you motivate the vast majority of America? 33% of us are obese, another 33% overweight. We have a real risk of diabetes going up to 50% of the total population of the nation by 2050. How do we motivate that, or how do we change the whole structure so we get healthy and stay healthy?
It's a key question. I mean, there's no simple answer to it, or obviously we'd be doing it. You know, last week I wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal calling for companies to consider a new position of chief health officer. You know, 15 years ago, they all did it around technology when there was a boom in technology, and all of a sudden, you know, we were using computers and everything was changing. Well, the same is happening in health. The technology and the knowledge we have is unparalleled. Big data is opening up dramatic new things, and we need leadership. To get normative behavior change, you need leadership, and it's sorely lacking in the health space. So companies have to step up for their employees and the families of employees. And at the same time, we need leadership there. You know, we've lacked it. You know, an amazing study came out earlier this year that's wild, and I'm sure you've talked about it before on your radio show, about artificial sweeteners. You know, when they first came out, they were the perfect food. They hit your sweet tooth, yet they weren't absorbed to zero calories. Very clever researchers did a study, first in mice, then in 20-year-olds, where they gave them any of the FDA-approved artificial sweeteners, and after several weeks, they all had markers of diabetes or prediabetes. They said, hey, that's interesting. And then they gave them antibiotics followed by the artificial sweeteners and no elevation in the markers of diabetes or prediabetes. So what happened is these artificial sweeteners changed the bacteria in the GI tract to push the system toward diabetes. So for years we had done clinical trials in the science world saying, well, people who are obese didn't lose weight on these artificial sweeteners because they must have cheated and eaten food. No, because the science was wrong. And so the challenge now is to educate based on real science and real data to make change.
Now, so do you think, let's go, when you say we're in the lucky years, first of all, tell us why you wrote the book and why you titled it The Lucky Years.
You know, I'm a believer, and I'm an optimist in the change. And all of a sudden, literally every week now, there is a new discovery in our space that's changing health and health care. And so just several years ago, it wasn't happening. You know, the perfect example is Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter announces to the world in a very brave fashion, I have a type of cancer that went to the brain, melanoma in his case. And just 2-3 years ago, that was a death sentence. Now, he's getting a drug that blocks a don't eat me signal on the cancer cell to allow his immune system to come in and make it a life sentence. A dramatic change in just several years. And we're at that point. But in order to benefit from the lucky years and the things that are happening now, you can't be passive. You have to focus on prevention. You have to focus on getting ready to benefit from these technologies. Healthcare doesn't come to you. You have to go to it to make the change.
Now, one of the things that I think you've advocated for in this is to have a health score for each company, if you will. That chief health officer is going to, if you will, assess the health of each company. When the CDC has really done that state by state, and when you do it state by state, you say, why would any company, why would a big automobile company open a new plant in one of those states which had high health risk, like Tennessee or Alabama or Georgia, because the health costs are really regional and they will be much greater health costs than, for example, if they opened a plant in California or Utah or Colorado even. So will this penetrate, do you think? Are we getting to the point where we're going to have to have some more serious regulation on this rather than just being letting corporations try and do it?
You know, it's a really interesting question. You know, how do you get someone to change a behavior today that's going to affect them a decade, 2 or 3 decades from now? It's a challenge. You know, health plans aren't necessarily incentivized for it either, right? The average time on a health plan in our country is several years. So if I go on a preventive strategy that's going to prevent heart disease 10, 20 years down the road, another health plan will benefit. So we have to start to realign incentives here. You know, one heart attack costs the company $87,000 on average. One case of colon cancer costs the company $120,000 on average. And so when you start to present it in those ways, okay, the goal is to keep employees through their lifetime, right? We don't want to have to change employees and retrain them, et cetera. We want to keep them aligned. The difference in the insurer is that the companies, there's a real incentive here. And you're right. If I'm starting a new company, I'm not going to put it in Louisiana. I'm going to put it in a country where healthcare costs are much lower. Even the state of California, which is one of the lowest smoking rates of the country, close to 27% of our healthcare costs are tobacco-related. So it's something we need to address, and we need to talk about more and push out there. One of the things that's allowable now across every state in our country in the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare as it's called, is you can differentially charge health insurance based on behavior. And I think once you start to tie that, whether it be a carrot or a stick, discount based on not smoking, or you actually charge a premium if you do smoke, then we need to make people realize what's going on here. And then that subsidy for the people with the good behavior to the others makes a big difference.
You should find out more about this. We've got another segment with David Agus coming up right after the break, but you can go to his website, David Agus, DavidAgus.com, and find out more about this book, The Lucky Years, and his other books, A Short Guide to a Long Life and The End of Illness. He really writes optimistically, obviously, as I do, because we hope it can change. When we come back, we've got some questions lined up. You can always call us on the lines or write us questions at udocs, udocs@gmail.com, or we'll ask our own questions. We'll be right back with David Agus.
more of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Presented by the Radio MD Network.
Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
This is Dr. Roizen, and we're talking with David Agus at davidagus.com. He's the author of the number one New York Times bestseller, The End of Illness, as well as A Short Guide to a Long Life, and the book he has just written, The Lucky Years, if you will. This is a sensational chance to talk to him, and I know we've got a caller on the line with questions, but in addition, I want to go over one of the reasons. Why is it the lucky years, David? Give me an example, like from big data, why this makes us lucky.
So historically, you and I, we wrote our medical records on a piece of paper, and they were stored in some cabinet somewhere. But now it's all going into databases. Some of the beginning studies of big data are coming out. An amazing one came out in Europe showing that the closer you live to the airport, the quicker the rate of brain decline as you get older, implying that the brain needs quiet at night to regenerate itself or help itself. And yet you miss that. You know, I have a 150-pound dog, and I wear those foam earplugs every night so I can get the quiet. She snores. The other is a wild one in ovarian cancer, showing that if you had ovarian cancer, you were on a blood pressure medicine called a beta blocker, a very simple generic drug, you lived many years longer than if you weren't. This was never an observation we would have come with in biology, but big data allowed us to make it, and now there are clinical trials ongoing to say if it's real. And my gut is it will be real. So it's very exciting the things we're finding out. You know, in Google, every time you search, search today is better than yesterday. They improve things on a daily basis. When you and I practice medicine, it's very similar to what we did a decade and 2 decades ago. And with big data, that's going to change.
So this is one of the exciting reasons why we are in the lucky years and can really have a chance of living much healthier, much longer. Jim Graham, I know you're on the phone. You have a question for David, for our guest, David Agus. Ben, can you put our... Did we lose our questioner?
No, I'm right here.
Go ahead, ask.
I'm right here, Mike. Yes, Dr. Agus, thank you so much for taking my call. I saw you wrote someplace that it said, pretty soon we may be able to turn cancer into a manageable condition that we'll be able to live with indefinitely. From my experience and what I've read and what I've seen personally in the past 2 years, cancer keeps growing. Don't we have to kill it before we eradicate it?
Great question. And, you know, the incidence of cancer isn't dramatically changing, but certainly we're not winning the war. I have patients who die every week from cancer. But for the first time in my career, I can walk into a room of a patient with advanced cancer with hope and optimism. And right now it comes from two buckets. It comes from what we call immunotherapy. The idea, like we talked about with Jimmy Carter, that I can block the don't eat me signal that every cancer cell has and allow the immune system to come in and attack it. There's several drugs on the market today that work in kidney cancer, skin cancer, some types of lung cancer, and several other cancers that can actually make cancer more of a chronic disease. The other big bucket that's exciting is what we call personalized or precision medicine, where literally overnight in any cancer patient in the U.S. now, we can look at the genes that are turning the cancer, the on and the off switches in cancer, and there are dozens of drugs now on the market that can hit them. And so in many cases, almost half cases with cancer, I can identify a target and put a patient on a medicine that many times can give them better, longer quality life. But while that's exciting and encouraging, it does provide hope to end some of the suffering, we're still losing the war. So, you know, last week I was privileged to be in Davos at the World Economic Forum where President Biden talked about his moonshot and that he's going to lead our nation's effort to try to make a difference in this horrible disease, because certainly we need to do more.
Yeah.
So some of the things are coming out. Go ahead, Jim. Mr. Graham, did you have another question?
As a matter of fact, I got several of them here, and I don't want to take up your time, but I totally agree with his statement when he was talking about giving out the information on your health and your genetics and everything else. And when he says, when I explain to patients what can be done with this information that you're giving out, he hasn't had anybody say, don't share my data. And my wife, who you know, Mike, just passed away from cancer, said exactly the same thing when she was under treatment. She said that she hoped that anything she learned, that they learned from her problem, that they'd be able to, help somebody else with. And I think that's a terrific, terrific thing. Now, I had one other thing I wanted to ask him. Is it true, you know, this is a true or false question, that everybody has cancer in their body, and if it is true, is it the elements or your lifestyles that brings it out, or what triggers it? If we all have that genetic,
you ask a remarkable question. It's a very perceptive question you ask. You know, earlier this year, a study was done that I think was somewhat shocking, where they looked at the eyelid. You know, the eyelid is the only part of your body where you don't put sunscreen on when you're outside. And what they found is every genetic change of cancer in the cells of the eyelid, everybody studied, yet they didn't have cancer. So in addition to genetic changes, you need what we call a receptive environment. To me, cancer is a verb, not a noun. You're cancerous. One doesn't get cancer. One has cancer. And so in order to really treat cancer, I don't need to just target the cells. I need to change the system. You know, if you look at some of the most protective ways we have of preventing cancer, an aspirin and a statin, that class of drug like the Lipitor, both of them work by changing the system and blocking or tempering down inflammation. And that's a clue there. You know, there's another big clue in nature, and it's really one of the coolest studies to come out this past year on elephants. Elephants are 40 times bigger than you or I. And actually, women elephants give birth in their 60s. The men protect the herd until the day they die, and they don't get cancer. Yet we get, obviously, lots of cancer, and we're much smaller on a per-cell basis. Well, we have a gene called P53 that corrects DNA damage. You and I have one copy. Elephants have 20. So they evolved a way so they don't get cancer. In a sense, cancer is built within us, right? It happens after our childbearing age in general. Like cancer before age 50 is relatively rare. And at that point, evolution says, hey, I don't care about them. They had their kids, which is the purpose of evolution. And so if we want to go to our 70s, 80s, and 90s, or 100 and live quality life, we have to focus on prevention.
So, and that we should end. Thank you very much, Mr. Graham, for your questions, Jim. And David, wonderful session as always. We will have to have you back. DavidAgus.com. David Agus is the author of the new book, The Lucky Years. It's got a lot of recommendations for it, The Lucky Years. It should follow. Remember, he wrote before The End of Illness, number one New York Times bestseller, and what has become my favorite, A Short Guide to a Long Life. Really simple, easy things, such as number 34, Don't Forget Your Teeth and Feet. We'll be back after these important messages. David, thank you very much. DavidAgus.com.